Y'all ready to have a meeting?
Let's have one.
My name's Terry and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at the Nana Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describe in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established the relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in our lives. We hope that no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that is the only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problem that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And now I'd like to introduce Mr. Joe. I think he got sober when I was like 19 or 20 years old. He knows a lot of the old timers from back in the old days, and I think you hear a lot of history from his story about how things were done back in the old days. So with that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Joe.
I'm Joe Rutledge. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Joe.
Can y'all hear me on the back row? I'm a little hoarse, but my sponsor, he taught me to always make sure that back row hears you. And that's hard to do, you know, especially in the beginning, but it's true. You know, the most important thing we do at an AA meeting, not just for the new man, but for each other, the most important thing we can give a man or a woman that comes here is something to think about on the way home. Because on the way home, you're by yourself. You know, it's easy to work this program in here. And a lot of times, in order for them to give you something to think about on the way home, what gets hurt? Feelings. Feelings can get hurt. Like pointing at the watch. Maggie used to say, you know, if it goes over 3 minutes, it's BS. Everything over 3 minutes. It's pure ego going. I'm going to get right into my story, and I'm going to tell. I can't tell. It said three parts. What I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, and what I was like in my affliction as I became afflicted to alcoholism. I was raised in a dysfunctional family. And what I'm referring to is alcohol was there when I was being born. My daddy was a heavy drinker. He turned into one of us. I was 17 years old. I helped take him to White Cross Hospital, me and my brother-in-law. I didn't realize at the time, but there was three drunks going to White Cross Hospital. Me and my brother-in-law hadn't got there yet, but we took daddy. And he sobered up, went to AA meetings. He gave me a big book about 5 years ago before he died. My brother-in-law gave me his big book. And neither one of us drank. And they've never been, you know, they came for a while and then they quit coming to AA. Now, what happened? It's easy. They're heavy drinkers. When you see somebody go back out there, don't worry, they're heavy drinkers. They're drinker number three. In the chapter to the wives, and in more about alcoholism, they're drinker number three. Well, I came in here, and I could remember one, two, and three. And I was remembering up there in Canton Jail in Canton, Georgia. I was drinker number four. My first experience with alcohol, other than slipping and sipping someone's beer or sniffing a whiskey glass, was I went with a neighbor that was a piano bar. I was 17 years old, show right after we took Daddy, as a matter of fact, and it's called Shakey's Piano Bar and Pizza. And they serve draft beer. Somebody smile, I think you remember it. I think it was on Roswell Road, I think. So coming back, I didn't know I was in a car, but yeah. But I remember, you know, we went in there and they gave us young people, you know, teenagers, they gave us a pizza. They set pizza down in the way they said, "You want a beer?" And naturally, you know, hey, you know, big time. Yeah, I'll take one, yeah, draft beer. And that was, I guess, I felt like I was drinking legally. You know, this is legal. That went on, you know, nothing happened. I became a helper in a body shop, and that's where I learned my first trade, repairing automobiles. And a lot of times on Friday, I'd ride with these guys to these what they call drive-ins. What they are, it's where they have roller skates and a tray, and they say, "Oh, y'all must be old people back there." Y'all say, "Yeah, you relate, good, good." And you know, the girls wore the mini skirt and they'd skate, and that skirt would sway. And them older guys, they'd go and sit there longer and longer, and I'm sitting there getting drunker and drunker with them. And they take me back to the shop, and I drive home kind of messed up. And I was just, you know, I was trying to be grown up. I was trying to socialize. And I was working at the job. I did another job. But I remember my daddy told me the night before I went into work at Monday. He was, they were showing the Vietnam conflict over there. And they were showing, you know, they were going in there and clearing off a zone. People that were wounded. And he said, "Are you signed up for the draft?" I said, "No, am I supposed to?" He said, "You might ought to do it." And then I looked at the TV set and I'm saying, "Is Daddy trying to get rid of me? Them are body bags they're loading on that helicopter." But I went to my boss the next morning and I told him what happened. And he said, "Joe, it might be a good idea for you to sign up for it." So I went up there on Ponce de Leon across the ballpark, and I signed up and took the spread my cheeks and all that, did all that. And, you know, I was in this room, and he told me, "You go in there." I went in there, and I waited for about 3 hours, and he came in there. He said, "You need to call someone?" And I said, "Is anything wrong?" He says, "No, you're going to Fort Benning." And they took me from the induction station right on down to Fort Benning that night. And, you know, I rode down there on a bus with a bunch of guys, and we all talked about how to win the war. You know how young people are? Started, you know, yep. We said, "Well, you know, we can get all that, we can straighten that stuff out, you know." But in the Army, here's how it went. On 4.2 beer, I went AWOL from basic training 2 times. On 3.2 beer, I went AWOL from AIT at Fort Knox 1 time. In 16 months, I was an E6 staff sergeant. Now, how did that happen? You know, I look back on it. One thing, I never went on sick call, because the time they took me at Fort Knox before the CO, they left the door open. And, you know, I could hear them talking about me, and I heard the first sergeant said, "This guy's never been a sick call." The only time I got in trouble in the service was when I was off duty. Hell, I had a maid, you know. I asked one of the lifers in there when I got real patriotic, thinking about volunteering, and he said, "Are you going to make a career out of it?" And I said, "I don't think so." He said, "Don't volunteer." And that kind of hurt me. I said, "That ain't patriotic." He said, "This ain't World War II." You know. But he did say, "If you go over there, if you live, you'll come back in E7. But I didn't, you know, I decided I wanted to get home and, you know, with my life. So I did my 2 years. But there was, That rocker I earned, I came in on weekend up to the Bay Area of the barracks. We slept in rooms, but I was in the Bay Area. And somebody left a shoe brush, one of his shoe brush on the floor. And this butter boy, well, this second lieutenant, he came walking up there and he looked at me. And I was kind of slouched over. And he said, "What is that on the floor?" And I said, "It looked to me like a shoe brush." And he said, "What are you going to do about it? What do you think we should do about it?" And I told him what to do about it. And if he'd have done that, he'd have had to go to a proctologist. And you know, it was that behavior. You know, I look back on it and I say, you know, that was so stupid. You know, not Jesus Christ. You know, I made rank in there. I liked the job. You know what my job was? A firearms instructor. And you know what I used on my last draw? A firearm. Oh, that can only happen to an alcoholic. You know, you could understand it if some guy's sleeping under a bridge and, you know, he gets and he finds a gun and stuff. But a person that's trained and trains other people, many things from the .45 caliber to the .44 2-inch mortar, small arms of armor. And you look at that bat and say, and I didn't know what was wrong. I thought it was them. Now, when I got out, I went to work for several shops. Got to keep up with time before somebody points me down. But I had a girlfriend that lived up in Cherokee County. And it was Louise Graham's over on Roswell Road, right around that place where the Shakey's were at. I met her, and I was having a hard time. I got a motorcycle, and I was getting into a lot of trouble with it. Now, the police back in them days, if you was on a motorcycle, they'd pull you over like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm going around 285. So I lived in Chamblee here. And go sober up, you know, go get some fresh air. Well, I'd go around that 285, and when I got off of 285, that's when they knew I was drinking. I'd stop at the stop sign, forget to put it in first gear, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, they got me over and they said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Have you had anything to drink?" I said, "A couple of beers." "Oh, you woke up at 1 o'clock so you could drink a couple of beers at 2 o'clock. No. They let you go. And you know what he said? He said, "If you're dumb enough to ride a motorcycle drunk, we're going to let you." Especially at night, you're the only one on the road, you're the only one you can kill. Well, as things got kind of bad, I decided to take my girlfriend's advice and move to Cherokee County, a little town called Ball Ground, Georgia. I went to put in an application at a shop up there, and all the cars that were sitting out on his lot were made in the 50s and early 60s, so I knew there wouldn't be no money there because that type of work pays commission. So my girlfriend suggested, "Won't you get a different job? Try something else." Well, they needed a policeman in Ball Ground. I knew all about guns, and I knew all about police, and I've been stopped by enough of them, all of them. And I took that job, and there was chief of police, there was me and Julian, which were patrolmen, and we weren't sent to school now. We weren't certified. They just hired us right off the street. And then there was a night watchman. His name was Denny. And so me and Julian rotated on the night shift. And we'd go check the doors. Ball Ground's a small little town, one street back then, with a railroad track going through it. And we'd check the doors, make sure they're locked up. And then the county would call us if they had something they wanted us to look into. And they called one night. This is good. This is the one y'all like to hear. And they said, "That's this kid. He's in a Camaro, brown or green, light green Camaro, and he's what they call laying drags. I don't know what that is. You get on some gravel and stomp it and spin it around." And I said, "Okay, I'll be on the lookout for him." He said, "He's heading your way down 5. and you know, look after him. So he came through town, and I pulled in behind him and stopped him. And the problem was, all during this time, I was drinking during the day. Because the way I looked at it, if I'm working at night, yeah, I don't drink at night. See? And when I get off work in the morning, you know, that's my night. So I can drink. If it was turned around, I'd be coming home in the evening drinking at night, right? Well, the problem, this is the problem we don't understand. I'm in trouble. If you're an alcoholic, you're in trouble when you ain't drinking. You know, the drinking is just the icing on the cake. That's going to get you to court. And then they really find out how messed up you are. But anyway, I pull this kid over, and back in them days, they had the balloon test. A little clear cylinder had some crystals, yellow crystals in it. Have any of y'all had? Is anybody old enough to have had one of them tests? Shit, I was dumb enough to give myself one. And the way it happened, I got him in the car. You come get back in the car with me, son. And I'm calling him son. He ain't much younger than me, you know. But I said, I'm going to have to give you a test. I'm going to have to find out if you've been drinking. And, we turned on the light in the cruiser. And I said, now, will you blow up this balloon? I'm going to put it on the end of this tube here. And if them crystals turn green, I'm going to call the county and they're going to take you to jail. And he just looked at me. And he said, show me how to do it. And I said, well, it's simple. This is the Barney Fife part. This is the part I hate. But it even gets worse. If it can. But I did that. I put the little balloon on there. And I turned around and blew in that end. You know. No, I blew up the balloon first with breath. Then I put it on the little syringe thing. And then you hold it up to the light and you let the air go out of the balloon in through that syringe. And folks, them little crystals in there went from this to this. I'm sitting there with him. He's just looking at me. He's looking at me like he is. You know, and I said, son, it looks like both of us needs to go home. And, you know, I let him go. Now, I mean, this is funny and all, but what if I'd have let him go and he'd have got hurt? You know, but I told him, I said, you know, I'm more probably, you know, I've had a few, I'm more probably drunk than you are. And, now you can imagine how long they kept me. You know, in other words, you don't hide nothing. You may think you're getting away with something. But, you know, the chief knew he could drive by the chief Whitfield, Warren Whitfield was his name. He could drive through my apartment. He could see us standing out there drinking beer in the middle of the day, knowing that I've got to be at work. He knew. But he was giving me a chance just like the Army. You know, he was giving me a chance. You know, people do that with us because they don't like the word alcoholic. Oh, he'll just give him another chance, you know. Well, they finally gave me my last chance, and they made me mad. See, that's how you get rid of a drunk, make him mad and he'll quit. And they made me mad because they didn't appreciate me. And then a friend of mine told me they're hiring up there in Gilmer County. So I went to work up there in that town in Gilmer, and it was the same type of situation. They had a day shift, a night shift, and they had one motorcycle. And they had seven patrolmen and a radio operator. And when the chief went to bed at night, he had one of them listening devices. So the men that was on duty at night, he could hear all the conversation going between the cars and the dispatcher. And, you know, he knew what was happening when we turned in a 28, 29, whatever it is, a license, tag report, or you know, had all them signals. I done forgot them now. I wonder. I guess I never learned them. Hell, I was drunk most of the time. But I was out there one night, and I pulled over this old man. He had a beard, and he had an old wife, and they was you know doing. I hope they were swerving. It might have been me swerving, but they looked like they was having problems driving. And I pulled them over, and I asked him. I said, "Sir, are you okay? Have you been drinking? Are you okay? You know." And if he was, I was gonna say, "Well, maybe we can let your wife drive." But he said, "No, I haven't been drinking." He said, "We just moved down here, and I'm not familiar with the roads and all that." And I said, "Well, I'm gonna let you go, and be careful." And I went back to the car and I reported that, you know, this stop is over. No problems. I see him on his way. And 2 minutes later, what happened when this guy was driving off and I was phoning it in, the results of the stop, he drove off about a 10-foot embankment. Just straight. The road turned and I'm sitting there watching him just... I said, "Oh my God, he just ran off a cliff while the radio was on." And they sent a wrecker and pulled him out, and he wasn't drunk. He was just too old to drive. So stuff like that. But here's another good one. They had the Apple Festival up in L.J. That's where they have, you know, have bands and bluegrass bands or just different bands come in there and just big event. And we had to work that festival. All the policemen did. So some of them would we work it on a beat, walk through the fairgrounds and up around the square. And then, you know, you do that for an hour and then you take the car and then you drive out a little further. Well, you know how you stop and you let this traffic through and you turn on your blue lights and you get out and you let the traffic, you stop because traffic's kind of messed up. More of a turn in the fairground. I got back in the car, you know, and I'm driving around, you know, out of the heat. See, this was in hot weather, air conditioner on. And I'm driving up toward the square in L.J. and I see these kids doing this. You know, they're doing it. And I'm thinking they're flipping me off. So I'm going to stop the car right there in the middle of the road. And I get out and I slam the door. And I go walking over toward these teenagers. Y'all come here, come here. And I look behind them. There's a store window behind them. And I see the blue lights on that car just blink, 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 blink. They were signaling me the lights was on. After about the fifth time of driving around the square, they just figured, you know, he's most probably stoned on something. So, you know, and what was happening, I decided I would drink just wine when I'm off work. I think it was it Mad Dog? It went from Barnes Farm to Barnes Foods to Mad Dog to Blue Nun. I think it was one of them. And I had one under the seat of my car. And the way I said, I just drank wine. I mean, you know, I've seen on TV, wine drinkers don't get locked up. They don't get in trouble. You've never seen a movie where they're throwing a wine drinker in jail. I forgot about the wine hose, you know. But they met me at the county line, Cherokee County, Gilmer County line. And it was a Sergeant Brimlow. He said, "Joe," he said, "Chief Popper said, turn in your uniform." So I did that. All right, I'm fired now. I'm off out of work. I go back to the apartment where I live. My girlfriend lives in the apartment across from me. And then the fun's going to really start. She gets a toothache and gets all upset. And I'm drinking and I say, "Well, we'll just take you to the emergency room." Well, I'm drinking, see. And I don't know why I did this, but I took my 9mm and stuck it down in my belt and go walking in the hospital. And she's trying to explain to the doctor, you know, she's got a bad toothache. I guess she just wants some medication for it for the night. She's not looking for a dentist. Well, I get kind of ill because they can't do nothing for her. And the guy looks and sees that gun in my pants. And he said, he looked at her and he said, "You need to take him and leave." And he points to that gun. So I went along with her. She said, "Joe, let's go. I'll be all right." We went home. The next night, I'm still drinking, and I run out of wine. But I bought 2 fifths of vodka during New Year's. This is around the 16th of January, 77. And I remember them 2 fifths of, and I don't drink vodka. I drank beer and blended whiskey, and I did drink some wine so I wouldn't lose my job, which I did lose, being drunk. And I figured, well, I have sinus problems, and if I mix some orange juice with that vodka, you know, well, I did. Vodka and orange juice. Orange juice just has good for you. It's good for a cold. My mama taught me that when I was in school. I drank all that vodka, but this much out of that second fifth. And then I decided I needed to clean my gun. And it was one I had stuck down my pants. And I picked it up, and I got the cleaning stuff out, and I went in the living room, sat in a chair. And all of a sudden, I hear this boom. And I didn't know what it was. And then, you know, I hear this rustling downstairs. There's some old woman that lived downstairs. And what I found out later, she figured that drunk that lives upstairs done blowed his brains out, you know. And so she calls the police. Well, the police that come is a patrolman and my old chief there at Ball Ground. So naturally, when he enters the doorway, I'm really off now. So I grab my shotgun. He says, "What's the trouble?" I take that shotgun and I point it at him and I say, "It ain't my trouble, Chief, it's yours." I don't know why I said that. I think James Cagney came into my head from some kid, some movie I watched when I was a kid. You know, one of these, "You're never going to take me alive," copper. When they ain't got no reason, really, they're not wanting to take you, really. But you're causing a problem. But, and the more he talked, the madder I got. And he was trying to calm me down. And I cradled that shotgun. It was a double barrel Coachman, Rossi Coachman, you know, like the cowboys, stagecoach drivers used to have. And when I cradled it in my arm like that, I pulled a trigger on that second barrel that blew a hole through the porch ceiling. They ran down the steps and I ran back in the apartment. I mean, I didn't know who was shooting. I didn't even know my shotgun was. And the final fiasco, it happened. Now this was my journey right here going to AA. This is the beginning now. This is the beginning. The fire department came out there, paramedics was out there, and it's a small town. So all the neighbors that lived within 10 miles of that courthouse was in our parking lot. They were hollering through the megaphone, Joe, come on out, what's wrong? Come on out, let's talk. And that's when James Cagney comes back at him, and ain't nothing to talk about, talking's over. But they shot a tear gas canister in my apartment, and the reason this is funny to me, all of it's funny to y'all, but the reason it's funny to me is that thing. It went through the ceiling like this, through the ceiling in the attic, through the roof, and it landed about 100 yards on Main Street in Ball Ground. When people saw all that smoke coming, so the fire truck and ambulance took off from Main Street, you know. And I was standing there thinking, I remember this, I was drunk, but I remember saying, How stupid can you get? You're supposed to lob that thing in. You ain't supposed to just shoot it straight up, you know, into the window. And I was hollering outdoors, stupid, stupid. Because I used to train them little M79 grenade launchers. You lob it in like a softball. And I was hollering at them. They's all over on Main Street and women, people grabbing their kids. We got a nut on the loose here and all. Well, anyway, I had a moment. We'll call it a God moment. And I got real scared. Fear. I was drunk out of my mind, two fifths of vodka and drinking wine the day before. But I got real afraid. Threw my hands up in there and I went down the steps and they put them handcuffs on me, rode me to the Canton jail. When I was in jail, I like to refer, these were the three, the terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. I was in a holding cell because they had to set bond. The judge has to set bond. You know, nobody can get me out. My sister couldn't get me out until the judge sets bond. He sets bond twice a month. Well, that first time coming around was 4 days, 3 days later. But I was in there with some guys, and I didn't realize this. I thought, well, they're just drunks. You know, these guys, they were like bullpen in jail, you know, a Bay Area. They weren't in there. Some of them was in there for Delia. But some of them was in there because they was in prison in Alabama. And some district attorney in Georgia got some more evidence on them. Hey, he stole the car, blah, 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 blah. And he slapped this little woman under them charges is right here. Well, they find out he's in prison in Alabama. They bring him back to Cherokee County, stick some more time on him. When you get out down there, boy, we'll take you when you get out down. I didn't realize that. And then I really got scared. Because they acted like they said, prison is a piece of cake. And I turned, you know, he said that. Of course, I was scared and sober. And this guy was, you know, these guys, they weren't midgets. They were big. And I just turned to the wall and I said, so-and-so you know. Piece of cake? Are you kidding me? Well, I went to see the judge, Marion Pope. They called him No Hope Pope. And I remember I used to laugh about it. We'd pick up drunks, taking them to jail, say, you got to go see Mo at No Hope Pope. Well, now I'm going to see No Hope Pope. And he told me, he said, Mr. Rutledge, I talked to Chief Whitfield. I said, what you've done is a pretty serious offense. I said, not only did you point a gun at somebody, you pointed a gun at a policeman. Not only did you point a gun at a policeman, you pointed a shotgun at a policeman. Now, if that would have happened after 9/11, I would have went to prison. There's no question in my mind. But he told me, he said, I would love to give you, you know, they sentenced you 4 years, you're going to do two. So he just went ahead and said, I'd love to give you 2 years. But fortunately for you, Mr. Rutledge, you come under the First Offenders Act. And I just, you know, what's that, you know? He said, well, he says, you'll do probation. So when he sentenced me, he sentenced me to pay a fine, something like $100-something to pay for the hole in the roof, and 5 years probation. And then my probation officer, I went to visit him a couple of times. I went once a month, and he sent me to mental health. You know, you get them now, you send them to court, they send you here. They don't do that. They won't find out if you're crazy. In my case, see, you go to mental health, there's a psychiatrist there. He's listening. You never see him, but these therapists are talking to you. The psychiatrist is the one that writes the prescriptions if he gives them to you. They gave me that stuff, you know, what do you call it, the little white pill. And if you smoke, if you drink on top of it, it'll make you sick. But he said, I'm going to give you 5 years probation, and I went to my probation, and Chief Whitfield said, you got to leave the county. And, you know, he knew, because you pull a gun on police like that, they're going to be gunning for you, boy. You know, you catch one of them cops in a bad way, this is a so-and-so, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I moved in with my sister in Nicula. Got a job. Was going to probation. And he said, I want you to go to AA. Because at mental health, we've been watching these films by Father Martin, Chalk Talk and all, and I heard him mention AA. My brother-in-law and daddy went to AA. It ain't no big deal. I don't need to go to AA. After all, they went, you know, and they went for a couple of weeks, got them a book, and then it was over. But I decided, you know, I just ain't got time. It's beans at 8 o'clock, and I work in Shamlin. I have to drive all the way home. So I went to see him, and he said, how come you're not cooperating with mental health? You know, I thought, what is he talking about? I'm well known at mental health. I've helped a lot of them old women and them people. I'd sit in that circle and talk to them. What do you mean I ain't cooperating? I'm doing my part. He says, no, what? Didn't they tell you to go to AA? And I said, well, yes, but I just assume they tell everybody that, don't they? You know, that if you need to go, you could go to AA. He said, well, look, Joe, he said, I got two deputies out there, and I got your vanilla folder here, and I'm fixing to send it back to Judge Pope. And I said, Wayne, it's Wayne White. I said, what's that address again? Some on Moon Road. Okay, I'll go there. And I went to my first AA meeting the next Monday night. They meet once a week, Monday night. And now we're in the recovery, right? We got 10, 11, 12, 13 minutes. They cut me loose in 2.5 years. Probation. And all that during that time, whenever I'd share with Hal Kirkhoff, Maggie Harrison, Joe Hubbard, God, he used to come here. Some of y'all may remember Joe Hubbard. These were people that they referred to as the God Squad. You know, these are the people of the God Squad. And I know I would say something, you know, I was, and Hal Kirkhoff would tell me, he'd say, you know, Joe, AA comes easy for a man on probation. See, I wasn't there a month and a half, and they made me an alternate GSR. And I was going to one meeting a week. And I thought, that's a big deal. Why did he say that to me? You know. And I found out why. He said, AA comes easy when you're on probation. So when they cut me loose from probation, and Dwight used to tell me, when you get up every morning and you look in that mirror to wash your face and put your teeth in, comb your hair, just remind yourself, is that still an alcoholic you're doing this to? And that morning, the next morning when I got off probation, I went in there, rinsed off my face, rinsed off, put my teeth in my mouth, combed my hair. I looked in that mirror and I remember what Dwight said. And I thought about it. Now, I didn't have no spiritual experience, though. But it just happened to be that was the end of the weekend. The next morning was Monday. And Monday evening at 8 o'clock, I got off work, went to eat, and I went to the Moon Road meeting automatically. It wasn't no big debate. But I was so happy when I get my guns back. They took all my guns away from me and put them in a bank vault. You know, I got to go down there to Atlanta, First National Bank, drive through a vault you could put a car in. The lawyer had to go get them, and I had to pay him to do that. But I was real thrilled. I'm free. But see, y'all reminded me, and y'all took me back to that time I was locked up with them prisoners. Yeah, they just feel wonderful. They've been institutionalized. They can't live on the outside. They can't go to a doctor when they have aches and pains. They can't keep a job. Not because they're drunks, because they're criminals. They've messed up so much that they'll wind up eventually in prison and eventually on medication and eventually dying. And that scared the hell out of me. Now I'm an old-timer. And you know what old-timers do? they hurt your feelings. You know. I remember, you know, Maggie, she would, if you talk too long, she would say, hey, she'd go, but you, just hold it. You won't talk this long, I'll let you give out the chips. Now that makes you mad. But on the way home, you think about it. Why did she say that to me? And if you come back, you realize you ain't the only one she's saying it to. She's saying it for a reason. You know, yeah. You know why speakers run over? You know, you want to know the real reason speakers run over, me included. You know why? Their dang ego. That's exactly what. Then you know going in, you can't tell it all. You can't tell it all. You can't go back over a whole lifetime. So what happens? You get caught up in it. Y'all are paying attention to me. Y'all paying look at me. Y'all paying attention to me. Look at me. And whenever somebody shuts you down, and now if I'm in a meeting and you saying this is a big book meeting. And you reading out of 12 and 12, one of them other self-help books, and the Hazelson's got 111 of them, 101, 111. But if this is a study on alcoholism, there's only one book. Now, the reason I say this, the way it is at the Gwinnett Room, them people on the back row are getting a paper signed, right? And not all people, but I mean, you know, I was that way. I sat in the back. They don't need to hear daily reflections. They don't need to hear Bill Wilson's essays. Them are essays he wrote. He wrote them on the 12 steps, and he wrote them on the 12 traditions. He called them the 24 spiritual principles of AA. This is why we call them that. And he wrote the 12 and 12. And if you read the foreword of that book, you won't use it in an AA meeting. You'll get that book out when the guy tells you he's still doing coke. He's trying to get off coke. You get that book out when the guy's telling you he's got a problem with sex. Or he's got a problem with weight. Or he's got a problem with marijuana. And you'd be surprised when I tell people that, they look at me like I'm a box of rocks. And I say, read the front of the book. The 12 and 12. Take your pencil and underline and see if I'm wrong. Because this is what this is about. It's really serious. It's really serious. Now, we carry the message. Some of them people on the back row, he may try it again. It's okay. He says we carry the message. If he gets that message, he'll go out like one guy said in his personal stories. On that way to jail in the back of the police car, he said, maybe those AAs are right. See? And you don't want to give him a bunch of all that literature back there. I got more than that. I got the history of AA. Bill Wilson wasn't the only one that visited Bill Wilson. Roland visited him, a guy named Shell. You know Roland? The story in the big book? They came up after the hospital. You hear this farce about when you go on a 12-step call, take a new man. Does that sound stupid to y'all? Do you really think they really meant that? Well, if you go in the basics, look at the book, this Basics. Hazelton's got it. 1944, when 8,000 people wrote Central Office, they said, what are we going to do with all these new people? What are we going to tell them? You know, Bill Wilson only had 4 years of sobriety. What are we going to tell them? So they had 1 hour meetings set up. Not all at once. 1 hour, to come in next week, 2 hours. They took so many of them steps, each one of them meetings. But at the end of it, when they got into the 12 steps, they said, they didn't demand it. They didn't make it a rule. They said, if you can, take an old timer. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? That means a new man can carry the message. That's what he's saying. We're saying we got a drag. No, you're supposed to say, look, Joe, I got this guy and he's bad off. You know, he's going to prison next time he gets caught. His wife's back in the suitcase. Joe, I wish he'd go with me. Now, they can identify with the drinking, how it feels to be hurting. You know, if I tell them I got 42 years sobriety, they just look at me like I'm lying. Well, if you got 42 years sobriety, why in the hell are you here? You know, if it's so great, why are you talking to drunks? You know. But, you know, you'd be surprised how things get turned around. And I encourage people, when somebody says something in AA and you have a problem with it, say, prove it. You know how many of them history books I've given out in the last 10 years? A lot of them. I just don't give them out to people just because they want them. But I'll hear somebody that's questioning something, or he talks about a book he used to have, and he loaned it to somebody, and he wished he had it back. I see to it that he gets it back. So, God, I'm going to make it, y'all. I got four more minutes, three more minutes. And I don't mean to be harping on that, but I have to give you something to think about. Because I was thinking about it on the way up here. You know, what do I need to say? Who am I going to be saying it to? How many people are sitting on the back row where I used to sit? You know. And remember, you give them something to think about. And, you know, I showed it to somebody here. Here's what my chip looked like. In them days, they put your anniversary chip in a box. The significance of it, your chip's in a box and you ain't. So that year, you stayed out of the box. And it symbolizes, he said, and he did say, keep it in the box so if you look at it in your little whatnot shell, you'll notice, maybe if it hadn't been for that chip and that guy that gave it to you and all them people that hurt your feelings, you might have violated that probation. And by the way, the First Offenders Act does not go away. It don't. You can get hired. It won't be on that record. But if somebody blows up a bill in Atlanta, they'll pull out all the assaults. And mine will be one of them. You can't hide it. You know, now, you know, people a lot of thought it's expunged. Now, you paid to have it expunged. They do not erase it. It does not go out to whoever's wanting to hire you. But if something bad happens and you do it again, that's your second assault. And I don't care if you paid $10,000 to get it expunged. That's your second assault. You'll be lucky if it just costs you $20,000. And I'm going to close early. And I appreciate y'all taping it, because it does make me feel important. But I'll leave.
Thank you, Joe. That was a great story. Really appreciate it. We're going to give out the chips now, and Mary L. is going to come up here and give out the chips. All right.
Thank you, Joe. I'm trying to think of a reason you hurt my feelings. I can't remember, but I'm sure you did, because I'm sensitive. I'm a sensitive type. Ask anyone. Okay, I'm going around. So we're going to do the chips. First chip, I always say the only one that matters. Just one day at a time, not pick up a drink. Anybody new or coming back that wants to pick up a chip? Oh, wow. Anyone else for white chip? 30 days? 60 days? 3 months? 6 months? 9 months? How about years or multiples? Anyone? You gotta give me a hug.
Oh, yeah.
No going. Okay.
I'm telling him I'm an alcoholic. Okay. And this is my friend Terry, and he's got 12 years. And I met Terry's father back in that, but Terry's one of the first people I met in AA. He's one of the 615 in Roswell, Sandy Springs at 8111. Because I was dope sick and couldn't sleep, and I dropped Lawrenceville out there, and he'd always be outside, and he was as friendly as him. And he has some struggles, but he's never stopped helping people. I don't know anybody that has helped people more than Terry, and I mean that. No matter what's going on in his life, he'll drop everything to help anybody. And, you know, it's my wife is crazy about him. I love him. You know, we have him at our home. And I got a chip for him. It's not in a box, but it's in a bag. So when you say you're not in a body bag.
Today I live in Paulding County, and I went to my meeting up there in Paulding County. I got there a little early, and I'm sitting at the table. And I watched my family come in, and they was hugging each other and kissing each other on the cheek. And it was so peaceful and so beautiful. And I thought to myself, who would ever, ever give this up? You know, God has blessed me so much. You know, this 12 years has been the best years of my life. I really wished I could have got sober when I was 19. You know, but we have to go through what we go through in order to get what we get nowadays, and to really appreciate it. So thank you, Tim, so much. Tim was my sponsor. He's my buddy. You know, we can talk about anything, and it's so wonderful just to have friends in AA and have friends that don't charge you to help you do anything. Thank you.
And one more.
And Tim's got a birthday too.
Right.
Let me tell you, you know, Tim's got, I was in AA, Tim met me at AA, and he got 16 years and I've got 12 years. I had to go back out there one more time and try it, and it didn't work. But when I came back in, guess who was there? My sponsor, Tim.
Right.
Tim, alcoholic. It's 16 years, and I'm just such a man. I'm such a lucky guy. I don't know what to say, but Joe, thank you so much. It's a perfect night for me, and I'm glad you were here. I'm glad to see so many of my friends at Mary Lord's, my sponsor. But you know, it's just amazing. You know, the things that AA has brought me. I met my wife in this room. I made lifelong friends in this room. And I started working with this meeting about 13 years ago. And Tim's done all the work for almost 11 years, but I still come here. But it's just wonderful. Thanks, guys. I love to say, and I say it a lot, it's just like water skiing. All I did was come in and hang on, and y'all pulled me up.
Just one more time. Anyone want to reconsider on the white chip? Congratulations on the chip you hold.
Thank you all for joining in the blue chip speaker meeting tonight.